Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Bhakti Vai Bhava Ki Jai, Grantara Srila Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai, coming early for class Ki Jai, Nitai Gopri Manandi Ki Jai. So what did we discuss in our previous classes? Why don't you just put a chair at the back in case you want to sit? Just put a chair near the back so if she needs to sit, she can sit. Just in case. Brenda, come over here. Brenda, come here. Come over here with Mum. Good girl. Such a good girl. That's it. Very good. Okay. So what did we discuss in the previous class? Good. Anything else?
Whenever there is a problem in the material world, we go for Krishna. And also he said that any problem that comes becomes as easy as possible, like very tiny. I think there's a word in Dharana Swami Ramana. If you have the faith of a mustard seed, you can ask the mountain to move as well. So if you have faith in Krishna, any problem becomes very tiny. If you forget Krishna, even a small problem becomes very big.
Anything else?
Whatever we desire is very, what we desire is very important. Like, whatever we desire, Krishna provides man for the body. That's why it's very, very important. What we desire is very important. We desire something, then we get that.
Yeah. Any other points?
We need to develop Yamaruchi and also Vasudeva Kathavachi. We see that demigods are approaching the Supreme Lord for something which is not, which is material. So the Lord is saying, like, you know, should have asked for the pure demigods.
Any other points?
We can also see from the past time that the desire to be destroyed is so good.
Any other points? Okay, so we'll continue with the pastime. Tonight we're going from chapter 10, verses 1 to 12. So we'll hear more about Ritrasura. Ritrasura has appeared, and the demons attacked him. Sorry, the demigods attacked him. And he simply swallowed their weapons, so they've gone to do pray to Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu has appeared. Lord Vishnu is instructing them that they need to, in order to deal with Ritrasura, they need to get the bones of Dadichi. So now we're going to hear about the pastime of how they approach Dadichi, and then how Ritrasura is dealt with by the demigods. So it's a very important chapter, and it's a very important section of the Bhagavatam, because Ritrasura is actually an extremely elevated devotee. And we're seeing a mood of surrender, which is even further than what we've seen so far in the Bhagavatam. So it's a very exalted level of consciousness. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us how to become pure devotees of Krishna to the highest degree of surrender. So we've seen Richard Surya's example. You see the perfect example of pure devotional service being manifest. Any further points?
This is the purport. In the purport, it was telling what is the mood, how a devotee, Krishna is instructing the demigods. You should not, I mean, he is indirectly indicating them. The purpose of praying me is not this. Because in one of the verses, it says, I mean, a fool prays like this, you know, for Lord. And the benefits that are obtained, the person who gives them, even they are temporary. And the annihilation takes place, even the person who gives those benedictions, he is also finished. So it's very temporary.
Okay. So we have verses 1 to 12 tonight.
What is that pronunciation, you know, he made a mistake in pronunciation, Prasta, when he was doing the sacrifice to him. So what the perception that was, because Ritrasura is fighting with his character, an enemy of Vrinda, but instead of that, of an enemy, a person whose enemy is Vrinda, or something like that, confusion. I don't know what impact did it have on the.
Can anyone explain that for?
First of all, there is a subject and a predicate in the sentence. So if you see that it is said that who will be victorious. So ordinarily, it was meant to say that the enemy of Indra will be victorious. But because it was turned around, it said that person whose enemy is Indra. That Indra will be victorious. That was the connotation that was given. Who will be victorious was reversed.
Indra would defeat Ritrasura.
Indra would defeat Ritrasura. That's right. Yes.
Instead of the other one.
Instead of the other.
The problem is karma kanda, because anything not properly done, the result will be something else. Because instead of, I heard Vrija Prabhupada Satyam say that instead of chanting short, he chanted little long, so the thing changes like that.
Like if we don't follow that system.
But suppose we have chanted it correctly, even then demigods usually go to the Supreme Lord, no, whenever they are in trouble. So then they would have gone to the Supreme Lord and he would have helped them out.
Yeah. So what's the point?
So what is the impact that wrong chanting had on the whole outcome of the world?
Well, basically, from a basic point of view, we understand that Ritrasura could have been victorious. It could have been destined to go a different way. But Indra became victorious instead. Does that answer your question? So I'm not sure what your question is then.
Usually Asuras are defeated in war, demigods are usually, you know,
victorious.
So because the Supreme Lord favors the demigods,
because
they are his devotees, so whatever.
Yeah, but maybe he wouldn't have been. Maybe Ritrasura would have killed him. Any other points? Okay. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, after instructing Indra in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the cause of the cosmic manifestation, then and there disappeared from the presence of the unlooking demigods. O King Parikshit, following the Lord's instructions, the demigods approached Dadichi, the son of Artava. He was... He was very liberal, and when they begged him to give them his body, he at once partially agreed. However, just to hear religious instructions from them, he smiled and jokingly spoke as follows. O elevated demigods, at the time of death, severe unbearable pain takes away the consciousness of all living entities who have accepted material bodies. Don't you know about this pain? So sometimes it is said, do you want to sit on the chair somewhere? Usually sit on the chair. Or you can sit, someone else can sit. Make room. Okay. Is Janeshwar coming? Or? He's coming? Okay, so you have to find another chair. Is Janeshwar on the wall? Please bring that chair. Here is one chair. It is sitting there. Or you can get that one. We have so many. Okay. You've got something to sit on? You have a chair if you need it? Okay. Just bring the baby close. There's a commercial break. John Shore is going to come in anyway, so you all disrupt my class anyway. So. How old now?
She's going to be 3 months on 6th.
Very beautiful. Very beautiful. Very auspicious child. That's because the grandmother is auspicious. That is the benediction. Very beautiful. She's going to be very beautiful. Okay. Now let me finish my class. Where's Janeshwar? Oh God. It's the latest class in the history of Bhakti Bhagavan. Thank you all for coming on time. So, as it is being said in this verse, at the time of death, the material body can be extremely uncomfortable. That's why it is mentioned that the time of death is not particularly well thought about or looked forward to most people. Most people don't think, or we don't like to ponder about what it will be like when we die, because it will be very uncomfortable, materially speaking. So, as the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us at this point, we have to be prepared for the time of death, because it is described in various places in the Shastra. The mind can become very disturbed at that time. And the body can become very uncomfortable at that time. So then you have to prepare yourself continuously throughout your life to fix your mind on Krishna. So that even when you're going through a difficult situation, the mind will stay steady and fixed. Because it's just like sometimes when we get sick, these kind of situations in our life are actually opportunities for us to see how well we are prepared for the time of death. Because sometimes when we get sick, our mind becomes very disturbed and it becomes very unsteady, and sometimes we don't think of Krishna so easily. So it is actually a test. I know sometimes when I get sick, my mind actually goes very difficult for me to control it and to fix it, even though I'm trying, but it's very difficult. So we have to practice gradually as we go through our life to bring our mind under control and to practice fixing it on Krishna, even in difficult circumstances. So when the time of death comes, we actually fix on Krishna, and the mind will not deviate. So this requires a great deal of serious sadhana. It means our sadhana has to become much deeper than what it currently is now. At this point in time, if you look at your level of sadhana at this point in time, it may be difficult for you to think of Krishna at the time of death, because we've not become fully accomplished as yet. Therefore, we have to practice seriously. Do not wait until you get old. And when you're old, you'll think, then I'll become serious in Krishna consciousness. You have to practice all through your life so that you will become competent. And so the mind will become very fixed. So that at the time of death, you do not deviate in your consciousness. So, was anyone in the scouts or the girl guides? You have them in India? 1, 2. So what is their motto in the scouts? Yeah. Be prepared. Like that. Be prepared. So that is the motto in the scouts and in the girl guides. Like that. Be prepared. So you should be like that in Krishna consciousness. You should be prepared. Because the test will come later in your life. So, any points?
Can you give us some practical point? How to fix the mind on Krishna consciousness? How to? Chanting is one way.
Yeah, you have to learn about Krishna. You have to learn about his name, form, qualities, and pastimes so you can think of him. just like we said so many times in the class. Okay, what is Krishna's hair like? It is black. Right? Krishna has black hair. And what is the tint of his hair? Tint means it has like a subtle color. Sometimes it says blue, sometimes it says red. You know, sometimes you'll see, like, their hair is like a little blue, but bluish kind of a tinge. Sometimes it's a reddish tinge. Okay, what else can we say about Krishna's hair?
Curly means
like what? Like what?
Like a wave.
Like a wave. What is his hair like? It says it's like the raven's feathers. You know the raven? Like a black crow? Like that? See, like the feathers, they kind of layer on each other? Like that, so his hair is like that, not like dead, not straight, but not like curly, but like kind of long. And then, what else can we say about his hair?
Goes to the sea.
What's that?
His hair goes to the sea.
At what age? Krishna has three periods in his life: Kaumara, Paugandha, and Kaishora. So at the age of Kaishora, his hair goes all the way down to his waist. Very long, like that. When he's younger, it sits on his shoulders, and then it goes down a little bit, and then Kaishora is very long, like that. So he has very long, blackish hair with a slightly reddish hue or a slightly bluish hue. What is his forehead like? You know, it says nectar of devotion is broad, very full forehead, very broad. What are his eyebrows like?
Cupid's arrow.
Like Cupid's arrow. Right? It says they're always dancing. Like a bow. Always moving. He moves his eyes, his eyebrows continuously. What are his eyes like? Like lotus petals. It says that they go almost back to his ear. Like a lotus petal. What else are they like?
Very attractive.
Moist.
Yeah, they're always moist. They always have a reddish. The irises, or the white part of his eyes, are reddish. Because he always has tears in his eyes. His eyes are always moist, with affection for his devotees. So therefore his eyes are always moist and always reddish. What else are his eyes like? Very restless, always moving. Always moving. Actually describes one quarter of his vision is looking for Radharani. One quarter of his vision is looking for his elders. Because they're always looking, where is he, what's he doing? So he's all like that. And then the other two quarters, I can't remember. But one quarter describes, he's always looking like this. Very restless boy. What else are his eyes like? What color are they? The white part is like reddish, but what color is the actual?
Brown.
Any other guesses?
Brown.
Dark brown. Dark brown color. Radharani's are?
Blue.
Dark blue. Radharani's are dark blue. Just like sometimes you'll see the Indian people. Sometimes like I see like the Gujarati, something like that. Sometimes they have like a green eye. When an Indian person with dark hair, dark skin, has green eye or blue eye, sometimes it's so beautiful, so striking. Most Indians have brown eyes like that. But sometimes you'll see someone has the green or the blue. Very striking. So Radharani is like that, dark bluish eye. Most attractive. Not that. So, what is his nose like?
Pointed.
Like a sesame flower. Like that. What is a sesame flower like? I don't know what a sesame flower is like. But he has a nose like a sesame flower. What are his cheeks like? Wrong. That's his lips. What's his cheeks like? Cheeks is a little reddish. It says ruddy. Little reddish. Like that. Then, okay, then what is his upper lip like? Up here, what is this like? Prabhupada says, Krishna has hair on the upper lip here, but it is like the hair on a peach. You know what a peach? Very soft hair. You know what a peach is? You know on the peach, they have very soft hair on the peach. That's what Krishna's upper lip is like, very soft hair. What are his lips like? Like a bimba fruit. What is a bimba fruit? What color?
Red.
Reddish black. Reddish black. So the color of his lips like reddish black. Like that. What are his teeth like? Like a row of pearls. Perfectly formed. Beautiful row of pearls. Okay. Then, what is in between his, below his nose here? Just below his nose, what is there? There is a pearl. He has a pearl hanging just below his nose, just here. Very beautiful. What is his chin like? Very full. Also has a very full chin. Very beautiful chin. What are his ears like? It says very like large and very full. Large and full size. And then what is his neck like? It has three lines like the conch on the neck. But what are his earrings like?
Maka.
Which means like a, you see like a shark or a fish, and then like with an elephant like tusk coming out like that. Like that. It is like that. Okay. So does that give you enough to think about? So you say, what do we do when we, well, how do we think of Krishna? There's so many things. We only got this far.
Do you know to think about your lotus feet, impressions in the lotus?
Okay, so now we'll go to the feet. So on the bottom of the foot, how many symbols are there on the bottom of the foot?
19.
Is it 19, is it? Actually, I can't remember. There's so many impressions on the bottom of the foot. You can memorize these things. So if you're asking, what do we think about Krishna? There's so many things to think about Krishna. There's so much information about Krishna. You should know all these things. You should know Krishna intimately. So you should know so many details. Just like he has a flute. How many different types of flutes does he have? How many?
Five.
Where did you get that from?
He
says there are five.
Okay. And one of them is the smallest one.
I don't think the small one's Venu.
Smallest fruit is for Venu.
Is it? Bumshi? Okay, yeah, it could be right. As far as I know, there's three types of flutes. There's Murali, Vamshi, and Venu. Three types of flutes. Yeah, one is small, one is about 12 inches, and the other one is about 18 inches, like that. So there's different flutes. So he plays different ragas. It describes that he has, I think, like 9 different types of ragas that he plays on the flutes. So when he plays one particular one, it calls the cows. When he plays one particular one, it calls the gopis. When he plays one particular one, all the inanimate things become animate. All the inanimate things become inanimate, like that. So many details, so many things you can think about Krishna.
Where is all this description?
Yeah, different books, which are there. You can read the books.
It's not in there.
It's in the commentary. Yeah, some of it's in the Bhagavatam, some is in the commentary of the Bhagavatam. Like that. But if you read Mahanidhi Swami has a nice book, Appreciating Sri Vrindavan Dham, and books like that, many books. So we have to be prepared at the time of death. You have to think of Krishna. There's plenty of things to think about, Krishna. You have to practice thinking of these things. So at the time of death, your mind will naturally go to Krishna. Naturally. So, any other points? So what's your point?
So is it absolutely necessary to think of Krishna? In case if we don't, then do we get a different result even though performing devotional service?
No, if you don't think of Krishna, then Krishna won't forget you. That's the point. But you shouldn't become relaxed in devotional service, thinking that, okay, well, if I don't think of him, it doesn't matter anyway. But if you are trying to think of him, but for some reason you don't or you can't, you find it difficult, then he will remember. Like that. But then if you're just relaxed and you're not performing your devotional service seriously, then at the time of death, if you are not serious, then Krishna is also not so serious. But if you are serious, then Krishna will be serious. Any other point? Same point. Ishopanishad says that Krishna will remember you. Even if you can't remember him, he'll remember you. He won't say, you know, I'm sorry you were in a coma, so. He's not that kind of person. Why don't you just get serious about devotional service? Any other point?
I think that when we saw Lord Vishnu, he said, you are something which I have never even imagined. It's so beautiful. We could not even imagine her.
Yeah, it's beyond our imagination. Yeah. It's beyond our imagination.
We can think about all this, the eyebrow is like this, the cheek is like that, but in his pain, he will think much more.
That's why Srila Prabhupada says all attractive, it is everyone.
In this material world, every living entity is very much addicted to this material body, to his material body. Struggling to keep his body forever, everyone tries to protect it by all means, even at the sacrifice of all his possessions. Therefore, who would be prepared to deliver his body to anyone, even if it were demanded by Lord Vishnu? Manoj Prabhu, would you like to ask?
Atmanam sarvato rakshat, tato dharmam tato dhat. One must protect his body by all means. Then he may protect his religious principles and thereafter his possessions. This is the natural desire of all humanity. No one wants to give up his body unless it is forcibly given away. Even though the demigods said that they were demanding the Dadishi's body for their benefit in accordance with the form of Lord Vishnu, the Rishi superficially refused to give them his body.
So what are the points here?
We must protect our body by all means. Selfish.
Any other points?
One greater possession is his body. We're very much attached to him.
No one wants to give up the body. Last week I think Madhav was telling everyone wants to become a king, but no one wants to die. So attachment to them is the possibility.
Can you please speak a little?
Anything else?
keys on a tree and the flux keeps rising, the water keeps rising because of the flux. The monkey with its three babies keeps, so it rises to the tip of the tree, where a point comes where the water is continuously rising and then monkey cannot find any further height. So therefore, she takes one of her babies and then takes that as the point to gain height. And so therefore, here we find that you do anything to protect your body. So you find that therefore, monkey first takes first baby, then the second baby, and the third baby, so that she gains continuously height, so that she can protect her body.
Mm. Beautiful.
Material body always gives problem, so we must take care to engage in service of Krishna, or Krishna doesn't protect the material body.
So, in the nectar devotion, it is mentioned anyabhilashita shunya. So, anyabhilashita shunya. Shunya means? Without desires. So, devotional service means you must not have material desires. However, in the commentary by Jiva Goswami on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he mentions that Rupa Goswami, in his definition of pure devotional service, he specifically says anyabhilashita shunyam, as opposed to anyabhilash shunyam. Anyabhilashita means not that all desires are gone. In other words, it is described in the commentary on the Nectar of Devotion that this example is given that at the time of death, or if you have a near-death experience and you almost die, and your natural reaction, as is the reaction of all of us, is to save our body, that is not against the principle of pure devotional service. Because one can argue, well, that's a material desire. That's my attachment to my material body is a material desire. And devotional service is meant to be without material desires. But it is explained because Rupa Goswami writes anyabhilashita shunyam. It is meant to be shunyam, means without material desires, but anyabhilashita, ta means, in terms of, I don't know what the actual Sanskrit means, but the ta means that it is not completely devoid of all desires. So some desire might be there, but it is not considered to be a material desire. In other words, if you try to save your body spontaneously from a near-death experience, that is not against pure bhakti. That is still considered to be in the realm of pure devotional service. Because naturally all of us do that. Even though you can say, well, that's a material attachment, but still, it is not against pure devotional service. Because by saving that body, you will use that body in the future to serve Krishna. So, technically, it is not, you could say, incorrect or wrong to try to save the body at the time of death. Secondly, Prabhupada points out that the consciousness of the self-realized soul is that he is completely detached from the body. You see, Dadichi, he is on another level of devotional service. His level of devotional service is that he has no attachment to the material body. That's why this section of the Bhagavatam is so remarkable. And the example given here is so perfect that both Ritrasura and Dadichi are willing to give up that thing which we're most attached to. Because the thing that we're more attached to than anything else is our body. We find it very difficult to give up our attachment to the body. Right? It's such a fearful thing to separate ourselves from the body at the time of death. But Dadichi and Ritrasura, you see in this pastime, both of them are able to give up their attachment to the body. Why? Because both of them have reached the platform of self-realization. So Prabhupada says that God-realization and self-realization, they happen simultaneously. That when you see God or you realize Krishna, you also realize yourself, which means your svarup, or your relationship with Krishna. And when you realize your relationship with Krishna, then, understanding who you actually are, you become detached from this body. So this is perfect Krishna consciousness. To be able to realize that I am something other than this material designation. I have a swarup, or a relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. And because of that, then I am not attached to this body. So Dadichi is like that. He is testing the demigods. He doesn't immediately say, yes, take my body. First he wants to hear some instruction from them to see that their mentality is correct. So he tests them. And then, at the end of it, he says, okay, then you can take my body. No problem. So this is the highest level of surrender, or the highest level of Krishna consciousness. So this is something we need to contemplate and meditate upon. That we can come to even a higher level of devotional meditation. Any points?
See, there are two points, Prabhupada. See, this body is a picture. It's not our body. So we have to think it is a gift from the Lord. The second thing, I was just thinking, because he was such an elevated person. Well, he must have known that it is the wish of the Lord himself. They can see, you know.
Yeah, he understood like that.
Yeah. So he must have seen that if he is asking, because he was asked like that by Lord, he must have known. So that gives you, I mean, he can do anything for Lord if he orders somebody.
Any other points?
So, in one way, Krishna is setting a supremacy of a devotee here. Although Indra, being a materialistic, they want to save their own bodies, and on the other side, we see the teaching when he goes for someone else's body, he is sacrificing his body. So, we see the same thing in Prabhupada's life, that he sacrificed himself for the welfare of others. So, you see, this the same point comes again and again, and the senior devotees are exemplary for this. You can also see the point that he's using his body to kill Krishna. So, the devotee must use whatever he has in his most prized possession in his body to kill Krishna.
Any other points? The demigods replied, O exalted Brahmana, pious persons like you, whose activities are praiseworthy, are very kind and affectionate to people in general. What can't such pious souls give for the benefit of others? They can give everything, including their bodies. So, what is the greatest quality that a person can have? It is to become selfless in devotional service. To become a completely selfless servant of Krishna. This is spoken by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Shikshastika. He says, in the fifth verse, what is the fifth verse? No, that's not the fifth. That's the fourth verse. Ayi nanda tanuja kinkaram patitam mam vishamam kripaya. So, kinkara. Kinkara means a maidservant. Or if you break the Sanskrit down, kim karomi. Kim karomi means, what can I do? Kinkari means maidservant. So Lord Chaitanya is saying, ayi nanda tanuja. Ayi means, oh. Ayi nanda tanuja. Son of Nanda Maharaj. Oh Krishna. Oh Krishna, Kinkara. Kinkara means, I am your maidservant. Lord Chaitanya is praying like that. I am your maidservant. Kimkaromi. This is where the word kinkari is coming from. What can I do for you? Kimkaromi. So this is the mentality of a pure devotee or a pure soul. He is completely selfless. Simply thinking, and simply saying to Krishna, what can I do for you? There's no selfishness within the consciousness. So that is pure devotional service. That is what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. Now, this is the reason why we're studying the Bhagavatam. Right? we're studying the Bhagavatam, and up until this point, or at this point, this is the most selfless example of pure devotional service that we have seen so far in the Bhagavatam. The Vritrasura and Didichi, they're completely selfless. Just giving up their body, even. All attachment in this material world, simply to surrender to Krishna. So by studying the Bhagavatam, this should be the result of the Bhagavatam, is that we should imbibe these qualities. So as the Bhagavatam is studied gradually and categorically, then we should imbibe all of these qualities to the best of our ability. In other words, we should let the association affect us. By reading the Bhagavatam, we should become affected by that association, and we should also develop these moods of devotional service. And also by associating with devotees who have this mood, which means very advanced Vaishnavas. We should imbibe their mood. So either by Vani or by Vapu, either by directly associating with them or by hearing from them, or hearing about them. So we hear, we associate with all these pure devotees in the Bhagavatam, it should be affecting us. We should be developing a higher level or becoming more purified by hearing about these personalities. Like that. Just like we hear the Prabhupada Lilamrita. So when you hear the Prabhupada Lilamrita, what is the result? You become purified because you're hearing about Prabhupada. So sometimes people say it is not a... It does not fully represent Prabhupada properly. I hear these kind of arguments coming from the Ritvik camp, actually. So sometimes they make these kind of... It's not. But how can they say that? I've read the Lilamrita, it affected me deeply. So how can someone then turn around and say, oh, it is not representing Prabhupada properly? It's not even a logical argument. Okay. So by associating with the person, or associating with the person through hearing about the person, you will develop these selfless, therefore, nityam bhagavata sevaya. You have to get the association of the pure devotee in the book form and in the personal form. And then we will understand this mood of pure devotional, selfless devotional service. So, any points?
I'll give you my example. When first time I read Prabhupada Jiram, I was just tears running from my so much attached. Couldn't stop it.
These Ritvik people are very nonsense, the kind of things they say. Any other point?
So can we not say that any Kshatriya is willing to give away the body? Otherwise, he can't be a
mover. Yeah, if he's an actual Kshatriya, then he will feel like that.
We find Karna as an example, who knew that once he gives his Vata Kundalam, he's going to die. And he gave it
to him. Yeah, those great Kshatriyas had that mood. They were not afraid to die. Any other points? Those who are too self-interested beg something from others, not knowing of others' pain. But if the beggar knew the difficulty of the giver, he would not ask for anything. Similarly, he who is able to give charity does not know the beggar's difficulty, for otherwise he would not refuse to give the beggar anything he might want as charity.
This was discussed to people. One who gives charity and the one who begs for it. A beggar should not ask charity from a person who is in difficulty. Similarly, one who is able to give in charity should not deny a beggar. These are the moral instructions of the Shastra. Chanakya Pandit says, San Nimitte Varam Tyago Vinase Niyate Sati. Everything within this material world is destroyed, and therefore, one should lose everything for good purpose. If one is advanced in knowledge, he must always be prepared to sacrifice anything for a better cause. At the present moment, the entire world is in a dangerous position under the spell of a godless civilization. consciousness movement needs many exalted learned persons who will sacrifice their lives to revive God consciousness throughout the world. We therefore invite all men and women advanced in knowledge to join the Krishna consciousness movement and sacrifice their lives for the great cause of reviving God consciousness of human society.
So, what are the points? Which of the 12 aims is being addressed in this purport? There's only 10 more to go. Which aim is being addressed? Only 9 to go. Only 8 to go.
Teaching application and there's a mode and there's an instruction.
Not personal application. Actually, Chandra Balabhi was right the first time about that. Mood and mission. Other aims are there. Principally, it's mood and mission. This is the mood, this is the mission of this kind. And this is what differentiates this kind from all the other movements, is the mood of preaching Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada's mood of preaching Krishna consciousness was practically unlimited. Prabhupada said to Burijan Prabhu, he said, "My desire is that everyone in this universe will go back home, back to Godhead." He said, "Please kindly help me fulfill this desire." There's also the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Lord Chaitanya is like a gardener. And being a gardener, he is trying to distribute the fruits of love of Godhead. And Lord Chaitanya says that I am putting my pencils in my suit, in my pencil case too loudly. So Lord Chaitanya says that I am a gardener, and because I am only one person, it is very difficult for me to distribute all of these fruits of love of Godhead. So kindly help me. So this is the mood of our sampradaya. This is the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the mood of Srila Prabhupada. That we need to distribute. So 3 weekends from now, the temple is going to have a Sankirtan festival. And all the devotees will be asked, everyone in our congregation will be asked to distribute some books. So we should all try to participate in the Sankirtan festival to some degree and distribute some books for Prabhupada's pleasure. Even if you only distribute one book, but you should distribute some books for Prabhupada's pleasure. So this is the mood of the founder Acharya of ISKCON. So Prabhupada is emphasizing this, that we should use everything in our possession in Krishna's service. Everything should be used. Whatever we have, that should be used. Our family, our wealth, everything that we have, it should be used for Krishna's service, for his pleasure. And we should, as Prabhupada is saying, we should make the greatest sacrifice. What is the greatest sacrifice of human life? Yeah, it is to give one's entire life to spread Krishna consciousness. So who is the example of someone giving his entire life to spread Krishna consciousness? It is our spiritual masters. Our gurus are showing us how to give the entire life just to spread Krishna consciousness. So we should also make that our life's goal. Just to give our entire energy in this life just to spread Krishna consciousness to everyone within the universe. So, any points? Speak loudly, sir.
The devotees in Russia, they actually are practically being the faith.
And even in Russia, in Siberia, in their book distribution marathon, sometimes the devotees are going out on the street to distribute Prabhupada's books in minus 40 degrees. This is surrender.
I heard some lady also distributing lots of books.
Yeah. Any other points? The great sage Dadichi said, just to hear from you about religious principles, I refuse to offer my body at your request. Now, although my body is extremely dear to me, I must give it up for your better purposes, since I know that it will leave me today or tomorrow. O demigods, one who has no compassion for humanity in its suffering and does not sacrifice his impermanent body for the higher causes of religious principles or eternal glory is certainly pitied even by the immovable beings.
In this regard, a very exalted example was set by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Concerning Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is said in Srimad Bhagavatam, we offer our respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Lord, upon whom one should always meditate. He left his household and life, leaving aside his eternal consort, whom even the denizens of heaven adore. He went into the forest to deliver the fallen souls who are put into illusion by material energy. To accept sannyas means to commit civil suicide. But sannyas is compulsory, at least for every Brahmana, every first-class human being. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a very young and beautiful wife and a very affectionate mother. Indeed, the affectionate dealings of his family members were so pleasing that even the demigods could not expect such happiness at home. Nevertheless, for the deliverance of all the fallen souls of the world, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas and left home when he was only 24 years old. He lived a very strict life as a sannyasi, refusing all bodily comfort. Similarly, his disciples, the six Goswamis, were ministers who held exalted positions in society. But they also left everything to join the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srinivas Acharya says, these Goswamis left their very comfortable lives as ministers, zamindars and learned scholars and joined Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement just to show mercy to the fallen souls of the world. Accepting very humble lives as mendicants, wearing no more than loincloths and torn quilts, they lived in Vrindavan and followed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order to execute Vrindavan's lost glories. Similarly, everyone else with a materially comfortable condition in this world should join the Krishna consciousness movement to elevate the fallen souls. The word Bhuta Dayaya Maya Mrigam Saita Ye Sitam and Dina Kanesako Karuneya all convey the same sense. These are very significant words for those interested in elevating human society to a proper understanding of life. One should join the Krishna consciousness movement following the examples of such great personalities as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis, and before them the great sage Dadichi. Instead of wasting one's life for temporary bodily comforts, one should always be prepared to give up one's life for better causes. After all, the body will be destroyed. Therefore, one should sacrifice it for the glory of distributing religious principles throughout the world.
So what are the points?
If one is given an opportunity to buy a description of Ashwarya, then one has to use it in national service and conditions.
Anything else?
So how is it that the last sentence, how is it giving his body distributing religious principles for the
world? What's the point?
The last line.
Yeah, I know. What's
how
the
does
point?
It prove it?
How what?
How is he, giving up the body, how is it proving the religious principles? How is it distributing?
Because you're spreading Krishna consciousness. No, Prabhupada's just talking about the preacher.
Okay.
So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself took sannyas at the age of 24. Mm-hmm. So a very difficult thing to do, to give up the material. But he had so much desire to deliver the conditioned souls that he gave up his perfect home situation, which is also very difficult to do. It's easy to renounce when the home life is not so satisfying, but when the home life is very perfect, then still he renounced. Why? Prabhupada explains, for the greater family. And even Srila Prabhupada, he became a sannyasi, and he spread Krishna consciousness over the world. And he then said, after he had come to the West and made so many disciples, he said that when he was young, one of his father's friends wanted to marry him or send him to England to study and then to marry a English woman or a white wife. And then Prabhupada said that later in his life, he went to the West, he made so many disciples, he said, now I have so many white children without the help of a white wife. So Prabhupada's mood was to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. In other words, to deliver the conditioned souls, the greater family. That's what sannyas means. Sannyas means you just give up the smaller family to deliver the entire human race, or all living entities within, all of God's children. So that was the mood of Srila Prabhupada. That was also the mood of the Six Goswamis of Vrindavan. And that was the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we should also imbibe this mood. Become more renounced, become more detached. Maybe we can't enter the renounced ashrams. Maybe we can't become sannyasis or brahmacharis like that. But at least from our situation, we should assist the preaching as much as we can. Spread Krishna consciousness to as many people as possible. That's the purpose of this Sankirtan festival, which is coming up, so that we can dedicate ourselves to giving Krishna consciousness to as many people as possible, particularly to the white people, because the brown people already have it. Most of the temple is brown people. It's easier to preach to the Indians. It's more challenging to preach to the Westerners. So we need to strengthen that side of our congregation. We need to bring more Westerners. So that is the purpose going out to distribute books, that we can attract Westerners to come to Krishna consciousness also.
You think? They know everything. That's the problem.
Yeah, but they join much easier.
Not here in India, but
yeah, but if you look at it across the board, it's easier to make Indians devotees. If you look at our movement around the world at the moment, you'll see more Indian people are joining. So it's easier to convert Indians. It's challenging, but it's easier. If you can make a Westerner, that's harder. It's more difficult to make Western people into the world. So that is our challenge. And according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is your responsibility, because you come from Bharat Vash. So according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is the responsibility of those from Bharat Vash to deliver everyone in the world. So I will simply assist all of you, because you are from Bharat Vash. Me and Yogesh, because we are from Western countries. But all of you are from Eastern countries, so we will assist you to spread Krishna consciousness. Aditi can help us also, because you're also from the Western countries.
I was doing what I mean when he shared in India. He needed just hundreds of people. Mm-hmm. So, he didn't pick so much food.
Okay. If one is unhappy to see the distress of other living beings and happy to see their happiness, his religious principles are appreciated as imperishable by exalted persons who are considered pious and benevolent. So, Sandeep, would you like to read?
One generally follows different types of religious principles or performs various occupational duties according to the body given to him by the more observed material nature. In this verse, however, real religious principles are explained. Everyone should be unhappy to see others in distress and happy to see others happy. Atmavat sarva bhuteshu. One should feel the happiness and distress of others as his own. It is on this basis that the Buddhist religious principles of non-violence, ahimsa, parama dharma is established. We feel pain when someone disturbs us, and therefore we should not inflict pain upon other living beings. Lord Buddha's mission was to stop unnecessary animal killing, and therefore he preached that the greatest religious principle is non-violence. One cannot continue killing animals and at the same time be a religious man. This is the greatest hypocrisy. Jesus Christ said, "Do not kill," but hypocrites nevertheless maintain thousands of slaughterhouses while posing as Christians. Such hypocrisy is condemned in this verse. One should not be happy to see others happy. One should be happy to see others happy, and one should be unhappy to see others unhappy. This is the principle to be followed. Unfortunately, at present moment, so-called philanthropic and humanitarians advocate the happiness of humanity at the cost of the lives of poor animals. That is not recommended herein. The verse clearly says that one should be compassionate to all living entities, regardless of whether human, animal, tree, or plant. All living entities are sons of Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 14.4, it should be understood that all the species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. The different forms of these living entities are only their external dresses. Every living being is actually a spirit soul, part and parcel of God. Therefore, one should not favor only one kind of living being. A Vaishnava sees all living entities as part and parcel of God, as the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 5.18 and 18.54. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow or an elephant, a dog and a dog eater. One who is transcendently situated at once realizes the supreme Brahmana and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. A Vaishnava, therefore, is truly a perfect person because he laments to see others unhappy and feel joy at seeing others happy. A Vaishnava is para dukha dukhi. He is always unhappy to see the conditioned souls in an unhappy state of materialism. Therefore, a Vaishnava is always busy preaching Krishna consciousness throughout the world.
What are the points?
Radhanath Maharaj's lecture just recently, and apparently when there was this devotees who actually passed away, and his health wasn't that good, and he was in America, and he said, "My health doesn't permit me to come to India, but my heart is sort of pulling me up there, therefore I have to go and basically be with them in order satisfy the family and all that. So even though health didn't permit, I mean, this is a sign of Father Dukkadukki, who is actually trying to go out of his way to actually be with the devotees at the time of the distress and help them. Any other thoughts?
Here's a description of the best form of respect.
Anything else?
One point is Vidya Vinay Sampanna. That means the humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees the equal with all same.
So this is the vision that we need to develop if we're able to transcend the material energy. That we have to become equally disposed towards all living entities. So it means we have to give respect to everyone. So Prabhupada points out that means the plants, the animals, the insects, everyone has to be respected equally. If we can have this level of consciousness, then we can transcend the material energy once and for all. So this is Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochiti Nakamchiti. You have to see Sarva Bhuteshu, means all the living entities the same. This is a perfect state of consciousness. So then you will want to help them all equally. So this is the level of realization that this part of the Bhagavatam is teaching us, to become completely selfless, not worrying about ourselves, but rather how will others be benefited. And then not how just particular individuals will be benefited, but how any living entity will be benefited. Just like there's that one story, Prabhupada, I was watching some Prabhupada's memory videos, where Prabhupada's disciples are speaking about him. And then one of the devotees, I'm just trying to think, I think it's Nara Narayan Prabhu. So he was alone with Prabhupada in his room. This is very early, like early 70s, or even late 60s. And he was in Prabhupada's room and he said, it was just him and Prabhupada in the room, and he was becoming mental, or he was becoming like nervous, because he was just him and Prabhupada in the room. And he hadn't been alone with Prabhupada very many times. So Prabhupada could detect that he was, like, his mind was not firm. So Prabhupada pointed to his desk, and Prabhupada said, "Do you see this ant?" And Narayana Prabhu looked down, and he couldn't see an ant. So then he didn't know what to say. Prabhupada said, "Do you see this ant?" So he said, "No." Because he didn't know what to say. He said, "No." Then he thought maybe he's wrong, because Prabhupada, maybe there is an ant there, but only Prabhupada can see it. It's a spiritual ant or something. So he didn't want to say no, there's no ant there. But he didn't want to say yes, because he couldn't see an ant. And then Prabhupada would say, "There's no ant there," or, you know. So he didn't know what to say, so he kind of said no. So Prabhupada said, "My only business is to help this ant." He said that if I can give this ant the holy name or prasadam, my life is perfect. Prabhupada said, "My only business is to serve this ant." And then he said, "Do you understand?" So this is Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means our only purpose is to help others become Krishna conscious. That is our only purpose in this world. Right? Both humans and non-humans. All living entities. That is our only purpose for being here. And if you get into this consciousness, if you enter this consciousness, then you won't have any problems in this material world. The only reason we have problems with our mind in this world is because we always get caught up in our own problems. And this is why we have so many problems. You see, particularly devotees, they become very disturbed in their mind. "Oh, I have this problem. Oh, I have that problem." But if you're focused on Krishna and giving Krishna to others, then all your problems become insignificant. Then suddenly all your problems come back into perspective. And your problems, even big problems, become very insignificant. So that is the actual consciousness of a devotee. That's what the Bhagavatam is teaching us here. Just to become a selfless servant of all living entities. So, any points?
Krishna
it's like Prabhu, when you are in Krishna consciousness, like you are an airborne on a flight, and therefore rest of any car or a property, if you compare them to difficulty, it will become so nothing. But if you are not airborne, if you are on the ground, then everything becomes too big.
Symptom of one developing the spiritual consciousness is becoming compassionate, which is possible by this paradhukti. So he is compassionate towards other individuals. Material consciousness is otherwise, so para sukhadukti. If someone is happy, they are sad. So it's more of emptiness. So then if they are not happy, the others are happy. They both are two opposite ends.
This body, which is eatable by jackals and dogs after death, does not actually do any good for me, the spirit soul. It is usable only for a short time and may perish at any moment. The body and its possessions, its riches and relatives, must all be engaged for the benefit of others, or else it will be the source of tribulation and misery. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Dadichi Muni, the son of Artava, thus resolved to give his body to the service of the demigods. He placed himself, the spirit soul, at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in this way gave up his gross material body made of five elements. Dadichi Muni controlled his senses, life force, mind and intelligence, and became absorbed in trance. Thus he cut all his material bonds. He could not perceive how his material body became separated from the self. So Prabhupada explained that he became disentangled from this material energy through jnana and bhakti. Jnana means, not impersonal jnana, but jnana which is enriched with devotional service. In other words, analyzing the difference between matter and spirit, which is the way Krishna begins the Bhagavad Gita. He explains the difference between matter and spirit, or the body and the soul. So we have to meditate upon this teaching of Krishna, of the Bhagavata, the difference between the body and the soul. And through devotional service, we can realize this knowledge. And then we can disentangle ourselves or detach ourselves from the material energy, and then we can transcend the material world. So we'll stop here, and next week we'll continue with chapter 10 and then enter into chapter 11 and hear more about Vritrasura's consciousness.
Prabhu, in many places it is written that they merge the five elements into the Mahatattva. How do you do that?
It means in your consciousness, then you see, you think that the material body is just made up of these five Mahabhutas. So you see it like that. At this point in time, we see material body, we don't think of it like that. But when you have higher vision, then that's the way you will meditate. It is simply just a combination of these Mahabhutas, like that. Actually, Lord Shiva says that when you see the breasts of a woman, you will simply see that they are bags of blood. He said you should meditate on this fact. It's just a combination of earth, water, fire, air, ether, like that. So if you meditate like this, then you can see it as just a material combination of these gross elements, and then you can detach yourself from it. So it means you have to contemplate. This is jnana or contemplation. Srila Prabhupada ki.